congressman not getting the necessary, I think, what is it, 1,000 signatures to get on the ballot?
That's what it takes.
Shouldn't that be the simplest thing to do?
That should be a no-brainer. That should be, you know, if that's his only ticket, especially in that district, which is a predominantly Republican district, you know, all he really did do is collect those 1,000 signatures and run a basic campaign, and he'd be elected for another term again. This was really, you know, probably one of the biggest political screw-ups that we have seen, at least in Michigan history, if not, who knows, nationally, about somebody, you know, not even getting to the ballot.
Yeah, I've had the congressman on the program before. He's certainly well-spoken and knowledgeable politician. Was, of course, a presidential candidate. But how likely or unlikely is it that someone in his position would have been in the loop on these kinds of details?
It sounds like he's a victim here of, you know, some type of misdoings by his staff or other people responsible for getting these signatures. Normally, a sitting congressman would have your local field director who runs your local office in charge of, you know, recruiting volunteers and coordinating others to make sure that those signatures are gotten, usually, you know, a good month in advance. But it appears to me there that they may have panicked. They didn't have enough signatures, so they started copying old petitions and changing dates. All the signatures seem to be real, but what they did is they just copied over old petitions, or they, you know, copied the current petition, so they turned in 2 and 3 and 4 copies of the same petition, trying to make up for it, and they got caught.
I see. Now, is there a criminal situation here? Is this something that is likely to lead to further trouble for the congressman and his staff?
Well, probably not for the congressman, but, you know, he did sign an affidavit saying that, you know, and he thought that those petitions were valid, and anybody who signed the petition at the bottom said that, you know, they thought that the signatures were valid. The problem comes into if you take a current petition and you start making copies of it and doctoring it. Yeah, there's some illegal activity going on here, and I would imagine the Attorney General certainly is already involved in investigating this, and at some point in time there will be some charges filed.
I see. And this idea of photocopying petition sheets using previous signatures, I mean, does that sometimes happen in subtle ways in these situations, or is this one of the first times you've ever heard of such a thing?
I've never heard anything this obvious. I mean, there's always been, you know, certain, you know, we have done petitions in the past, right? We have seen petitions in the past where people do round robins, where they take a phone book and they sign a petition, and you can just tell it's all, you know, in the same order, of a street order. They're all in alphabetical order, things like that, and those get thrown out immediately because they question whether or not those are done. And when you pay petition circulators and things like that, sometimes you get those kind of things all the time. People, because they're getting paid by the signature, so they're always trying to figure out a way to make an extra buck. But nothing that's like this, where you have the congressman staff or his campaign staff, it appears to me, doctoring these sheets deliberately in order to try to make up for, you know, a lack of signatures that they had. They couldn't even get 1,000 signatures, which is ridiculous. It shouldn't take that much for a sitting congressman to get 1,000 petitions signed.
I'm talking to Tom Shields, the founder and president of Marketing Resource Group, a well-known political consulting firm right here in Lansing. So, Tom, this leaves him with a write-in campaign. Does he have any chance of being reelected with that approach?
Well, you know, the campaign cost probably went from $100,000 to, you know, to $2 million in having to run a write-in campaign. There's about an average of about 40,000 votes cast in the Republican primary in that district 2 years ago. So he will have to, and there's a Republican who filed on the ballot. If there was, you know, a Republican had not filed, it'd be a lot easier to run a write-in campaign because you need a minimum number of votes to write in to put your name on the ballot. But since there's a gentleman already on the ballot there, he has to beat that person. It's a real difficult effort here to get 20,000 or 25,000 people to go to the polls on Election Day, specifically to write your name in on the ballot, and it's not an easy thing to do on some of these ballots. It has to be done in a very specific spot on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be close, at least, to his spelling of his name. And Thaddeus is not exactly an easy name to spell. But it has to, you know, show voter intent that they plan to vote for you. But it's a difficult process. He's going to educate, you know, an awful lot more people than what it will take to go to the polls and vote.
Do you think he will lose then?
I think he's behind the eight ball on this one. Now, I'd maybe give him a 40% chance. The only thing he has going for him is that the guy who did file is complete unknown, sort of a Tea Party guy. that may not fit in with the district, so there may be some sympathy. But if a sitting state representative or a former candidate would have filed against him, I think he'd be toast right now.
I want to ask you about Roy Schmidt, the former Democratic, now Republican state representative, or running to be Republican state representative out of Grand Rapids. Now, the Michigan Democratic Party filed a complaint with the Secretary of State today against Jace Bulger, the Speaker of the House, and his chief of staff, saying that Roy Schmidt violated state election laws, in which case what he did was 50 minutes before the 4 p.m. filing deadline on May 15th, he withdrew his paperwork to run as a Democrat and instead refiled then as a Republican. How serious of an issue is this politically for him, and would you have advised him to approach his reelection bid this way?
Well, Schmidt, decided to change parties, and in order to, keep an advantage, he kept it to himself up until the last minute before he filed, which there's nothing wrong with that. That's just good political gamesmanship. I think, why would you, do it early? If you did it early, then there's a lot of times for the Democrats to recover, recruit a candidate and everything else. The problem that you get in that race is not, the complaint that Brewer filed today is just a nuisance complaint. I mean, it charges them that they use, political staff, and they used a notary who works for the Bulger's office to sign Schmidt's petition. If everybody who took a phone call in the state legislative office, a campaign call from somebody, was charged with a complaint, then there wouldn't be any legislators. I mean, they all do some form of politics while they're sitting in office. It's part of the job almost. But the problem comes into that is that there was a gentleman who filed as a Democrat in the Schmidt seat by the name of Matt Muzak, I think his name is.
Right, he's apparently a family friend of Schmidt.
And he appears to be a family friend. And there's nothing, that's more political gamesmanship to get people to file. This happens all the time in politics. People file for an election just hoping that somebody doesn't file petitions, and once they do, then they withdraw their name, or they get somebody else to file in a campaign who may have a similar name to your opponent. So that splits up the vote a little bit. But in this case, he signed an affidavit saying he lived at that current address where he filed from for 22 years, which appears to be not true. Now, he did withdraw his candidacy, so there may be no harm, no foul there. But if there's any investigation going on, I think that's the one point that people have to take a look at. This young man signed an affidavit, may not be true.
And do you think that'll get back to Schmidt in any way, though?
Well, it could be. I mean, obviously, the whole episode here may not pass the smell test with some of the voters, so that could reflect on him. I think Republicans are basically pretty happy that he's come over to the Republican side. Democrats are really unhappy that he shifted parties. But the independents are the ones who will decide the election on Election Day. So Schmidt needs to, go work those voters and say that he's the same guy before when he was a Democrat that they elected him, in the past, and has now elected him as a Republican. So it may have some initial negative effect here on this, especially if he's directly associated with the candidate that signed the false affidavit.
Although, is there another candidate he'll be running against on the Democratic side, though?
Well, yeah, now there's an open seat there. They can run a write-in campaign. The Democratic Party can. If they get a certain number of votes, I don't know exactly what that is, but it's a minimal amount of votes, then that candidate will appear in the general election if they get somebody. So they'll be able to fill the ballot there. So I'm imagining that this thing will go away before they get to the general election, and they'll just move on to other issues.
I see. Tom Shields, the founder and president of Marketing Resource Group, political consulting firm right here in Lansing. Tom, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Michael, thank you for having me.
Excellent. We will be right back to talk about the many Americans that are now facing waiting to retire due to the Great Recession, but they have another option. It's called It's called phased retirement. You'll find out exactly what it involves and if it's something you might want to consider. That's next. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS.